Hello and welcome to this special edition of the ANF podcast. In this episode, we're sharing a keynote speech that I gave to the Corran Bath Post-Adoption Support Conference to mark the release of their best practice guide written by Caroline Thomas and John Simmons. I tried to ground the talk in the lived experience of families, and there was certainly much more that could have been said. I hope you find it interesting, and please let us know what you think. As always, if you've experience of adoption, fostering, or special guardianship from any perspective, personal or professional, and would like to share that on the podcast, please get in touch through Facebook page, the app formerly known as Twitter, or you can email us at anfpodcast@gmail.com.
Thank you, John. Much appreciated. I'm slightly intrigued by today, to be honest with you, because everyone else is an expert, and I'm slightly uncomfortable with the notion of expert by experience. But I'm going to go for it. I'm going to lean into it. I'm the keynote. There's no board of trustees you can complain to, so you know you can't get me sacked from being me, which is quite wonderful. I had a particularly interesting conversation with an adoptive parent recently, and they said, the adoption system doesn't work. And I took umbrage, and I was a bit, I think I know what you're saying, but for lots of children and lots of families, the adoption system does work. That's the reality. So if you, at the end of my sort of whatever 20 minutes, you think that I'm a naysayer, you might be wrong. What I said to this person was, yes, the adoption system does work for lots of families, but for some families it does not work. And I think that today you are a terrible group of people to speak to. I'm not joking, because you are here. The very fact that you are here means that I am preaching to the choir. Anything that I say today will likely be things that resonate with you, hopefully, and you are going, yes, I'm here because I want things to be better, because what we're doing at the moment is okay, but we want it to be better. So you're a terrible audience. The report, I hate the best practice guide. Controversial thing to say at the start of the day, but I'll tell you for why, because I started to read it yesterday, having already decided what I was going to say, only to discover that the best practice guide said it. I thought, oh, well, that's what's the blooming point of me turning up and saying witty, pithy things that we're going to be like cutting through the ether, and I have to say that the best practice guide, it says it all, really. It's got some absolute pearls in it, so I would recommend you read it, buy it, put it under the pillow of your worst social worker in your organisation. You know who they are. I guess I should introduce myself. My name is Al Coates, and I am a social worker. I haven't always been a social worker. I qualified in 2013. The primary reason I qualified was because there was a bursary and I needed money because I had to leave my job because I'd adopted children. The second reason I became a social worker was because I knew that I needed to be system literate, because I could read the signs that we as a family, we were going to hit the rocks. We were on the rocks, but the rocks that were coming were bigger. And I'm not speaking tonight. John's got his whirligig tonight about saying goodbye to him, and that's wonderful. But John, I want to thank you for something you did for me. About 6 years ago, I found myself in this peculiar circumstance where one of my children accused me of trying to kill her, as you do, and everyone took that very seriously, as we would hope. And the police interviewed me under caution. New experience for me. Terrifying experience. Police said, after the interview, said, Mr. Coates, best bit of social work I've ever had. Said, Mr. Coates, what are you going to do to keep you and your family safe? Social worker's response was to say, you can't go home. And for 11 days, I was removed from my house. At some point during that period, now I don't know John, so I'm not here to fluff you up or make you beautiful. I don't know you that well. I've seen you in a lot of meetings. He could be a tyrant around the office. He could be in your stuff in the fridge. Who knows? But I got a phone call of John. I don't know John very well at all. And he said, Al, I've heard what's happened. Can I help? Helen Oakwater, author, adoptive parent, slightly a controversial figure, said, took the African proverb, it takes a village to raise a child, and she expanded it, and she said, it takes a city to raise a traumatized child. And John, who doesn't know me from Adam, really reached out a moment when social services invited me to stay in my friend's spare room while chaos reigned at my house. Now, I did go home, everything's fine, is it? I still wake up in the night screaming. But I just wanted to say thank you, John, because that I go back to that again and again, and it makes me think about what is adoption support and what do we need? What does an adoptive parent need? I need people who understand national policy. So that when a children's social worker says, you can't go home, Mr. Coates, I can say, well, I can actually, because the police have said I'm safe. Anyway, we're not here to hear about me, or are we? I'm not sure. I got an email a few days ago from a school that I work with it around challenging violent aggressive behaviour, and there's maybe 20 parents I'm working with, but one of those parents is an adoptive parent. I got an email off the school saying, oh, can you help? One of our parents is really struggling. They've had the police round 3 times last week at home because of the child's behaviour. This is a 10-year-old. Pause at that moment. Has anyone here ever called the police on their child? Yeah? I'm not going to point you out. I'm not going to ask you. But how desperate do you have to be to pick up the phone and call the police on your child? Because you know that once you pick up the phone, you lose any sense of control. So this adoptive parent, police have been 3 times in a week. The child is at risk of exclusion from school. Me, not wanting to get involved, said, are they in touch with their post-adoption support team? Pause. Well, yes. All right, well, they should be able to, and I kind of spewed off the pathways that should be there. So this is 10 days ago I got this email. They said, yeah, they had a Zoom meeting before Christmas. They're full at the moment. They've put them on a waiting list for an ASF assessment. And the police are at the door. We live in interesting times. Now, I cast my mind back. I adopted my first group of children. That sounds a weird way of describing them. We adopted 3 siblings in 1999. And I remember that model of adoption support, which was above a working man's club, Christmas party, which was, I still wake up in the night screaming. And as a family, we've tracked through a whole range of different ways of doing support. And would I be in a world where there is no support? No. That what we've got now is probably the best it's ever been. And that's the truth of it, that we've never had it so good. When you look at the figures, and you read the beginning of the best practice guide, you look at the figures and hundreds of millions of pounds have been ploughed in to supporting adoptive families. But, well, maybe we'll get to the but later. I've not even got onto my slides. I'm not very good at this. Let's see what this button does, Liam. Right, we practiced. He had to coach me. Bless him. Oh, there you go. Ultimately, this is... she is so damn funky. This is me declaring that we need to go to the dentist because she's got an appointment. I was a stay-at-home dad and she said, stop. I just need to get prepared for the dentist. So this is her... These are the first 3 children we adopted. This was a little fosterling that came to us with her sister that we were asked to adopt, and we adopted. Everything we say today is grounded in children, not in the abstract, not statistics or numbers or figures, but it's about their lives. John Rabel, Dr. John Rabel, who I really recommend his resources, he said, post-adoption is a misnomer. Adoption is not a one-time event that happens to a child. Every day, now these are now 30, 27, 28, 18, but the reality is their early life experience is present with them, if not daily, but often very frequently. The shadow of those early life experiences casts long. Adoption, we've reduced the number of children to, we haven't purposefully reduced those children, but the law, the system, social care, society, meant that we've condensed those children into the most vulnerable children. Those children that have reached, and those families and circumstances that have reached a threshold to ensure that those children should be removed from their families and never return. But the pathway for these children, for my children, my daughter, who's now, she's 18 now, she's an absolute character. She remains an absolute character. But for her, even if we just take her as an example, she came to us at 3 months old as a fosterling, but what this little girl thought about adoption is not what the 7-year-old thought about adoption, is not what the 12-year-old thinks about adoption, it's not what the 15-year-old thinks about adoption and needs from adoption. When we think in terms of life story, we understand identity evolving over time. That when this little girl looks in the mirror at 15, I don't have the answers to answer her. For one, I'm white, British, she's mixed. I've taken on things it's above my pay grade. Now, I'm a social worker, but as a rule of thumb, you shouldn't therapize your own kids, right? That always ends badly for everyone concerned. But the reality is, for her, the questions that she has about her life will evolve beyond 18. Even now, she's a new mum, she's loving being a mum. But even then, new questions arise about how she interacts with her birth family. We live in a world now where at 13, 14, 15, at 12, at 10, 2 minutes and a really, 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 really pissed off child can find their biological family. The path that normal children work through social media is enhanced by brambles and thorns and snares for children who are adopted. We need to walk with adoptive parents through that, because actually that's we're not just normal parenting. We're not normal parenting. And the nature of the children's stories, which is much more extreme. Have you ever had to share with your child the loss of their parent, the death of their parent? That's a tricky day in the office. We have to help children make sense of the reason why they were removed. And it's not the narrative of 50, 60, 30, 40, 50, 60 years ago. It's a very different narrative in terms of why those children were removed. I've made these slides a week ago, and I've changed what I'm going to say like 8 or 9 times. And I have asked permission. I sat down with my kids and I said, is that okay if I show you? And they went, yeah, it's fine. But she was very adamant that she said, please make them understand that I was going to the dentist's, and it was very important. She was very clear about that. Have you ever walked into a child's bedroom and seen this on their bedroom wall? Adoptive parents we're asking more of them than we ever, ever have had to ask. Now, in one sense, all parents, regardless of how you became parents, you just do what you have to do. That is the nature of parenting. You respond to the need that's given to you. So in that sense, adoptive parents are not exceptional. And you know, we must never think of them as being exceptional. I kind of get really, if you want to wind me up, start saying, oh, you've done well. I've just done what I had to do, like every other parent. I just take the knocks as they come. But the reality is, for children who are experienced early adversity, that some of those knocks are bigger. I went back and I reread Beyond the Adoption Order, which I remember that coming out. I was newly qualified. I was shiny. It's like young, eager, going to change the world. The report is absolutely amazing. Absolutely amazing. It's a snapshot of that time. And it talked in terms of one of the sort of the standout things it talks about in terms of a third of families in crisis. A third of families, difficult days, good days. A third of families doing okay. Last year's adoption barometer said 31% of families are in crisis. £200 million has been spent, and to what effect? £200 million. Hell's teeth. That's a lot of money. Now, I'm not here to be a kind of cast poor cold water. Just fun. I'm not here to pour cold water on what we've done, but that's the reality. What difference has all these innovations? Have these innovations been reinforced through actual development of practice? We ask the question, what has been achieved? What difference has been made? We've got some fantastic pieces of research about what has happened, but have we created a peculiar culture around adoption support? I am I'm a bit poacher turned gamekeeper, which is an awful expression, so I would never use it. But I often get into Facebook forums or forums where adoptive parents are kind of doing what they do. I'm in a group where there's approximately 600 families who are at crisis, been through crisis, or are about to reach crisis and disruption. 600 individuals, right? They're hidden in the world of adoption, and they're livid. Understandably, they're heartbroken. Their lives have been destroyed. I told you, I've been up before the police officers. We see families that are struggling in school, special educational needs and disabilities. We see that system is a system that's creaking at best, failing at worst. But actually, our adoptive families are then trying to navigate that. Families who have zero system literacy, who are used to having nice social workers like John, see what I did there, come and do a lovely assessment with them. We all eat hobnobs and we say what a great parent we're going to be. And then the crap hits the fan 4 years down the line. And it's not John who turns up to my house. It's a local authority social worker who is perhaps 3 years out of training, has limited understanding of adoption. They've seen Annie. They've watched Disney films. They have a generic understanding. They anticipate that adoption is green pastures. Adoption is not green pastures for very many people. It's maybe better than the alternatives, but that's kind of damned by faint praise, potentially. Families in actual crisis, like the parent who's waiting on a waiting list to get allocated a social worker while the police are at the door and my child is being removed. And the police is at the door because the child, the 10-year-old, is assaulting family members. Right. So this is, oh, is she cute? So out of the blue, the day I qualified, she arrived as if by magic, fully formed. She was 20 months old and she was the younger daughter of the dentist child. As a younger sister, not daughter. Yeah. I was going to say, oh, that's very complicated. It's a terribly modern world, isn't it? But she came, and the reality is that families find themselves with huge levels of evolving need, that actually things are moving quickly in their families, that actually what I need this week is not what I need next week. And we have services that have got their feet, oftentimes that the roots and history of post-adoption support are kind of, where are they? And who are the people we've got working in post-adoption support? I used to jokingly say, before I became a social worker, so I would never say it as a social worker, I used to say, adoption seemed like a place that old social workers were sent to die. Now, I'm not saying that. I just did say it. But I remember an adoption social worker, me ringing them and saying, I am desperate. Rosa, my daughter, and her bigger sister was 3 and 4. And I said, I have to give up work. I'm having panic attacks. I'm frightened of my 3-year-old. And she looked at me and she said, maybe your daughter's picking up on your anxiety. Some social workers, frankly, I wouldn't send to the shops for crisps. That's not what I need to hear. Has the Adoption Special Guardianship Support Fund kind of dislocated the roots of our social work practice from what post-adoption means? When I talk to families, they want to be listened to. They want to be heard. They want to be acknowledged, and they want empathy and compassion. They want people to sit and not be waiting for their turn to talk to give them an answer about the Adoption Support Fund or this and that. The fundamentals, I'm a practice educator. God bless my students. I'm a practice educator, but it's the basics that we need to get right, which are the building blocks. The Adoption Support Fund, has it created a culture with a therapy inflation where we've got families who go, well, Theraplay worked for little Johnny down the street and he's adopted, so it's bound to work for Tarquin. We know that therapy isn't like that. My daughter had 8 years of therapy, one of my daughters. I've got five daughters. Had 8 years of therapy. Did it make a difference? Incrementally, it made a difference, but did it change the behavior? Maybe not. Changed me. I understood an awful lot more, but it didn't necessarily change her. Oh, look at me, I've run out of time. Got to finish now. Andrew Christie, who was the second from last head of the Adoption Special Guardianship Leadership Board, said, do we need to renegotiate the adoption contract? I do wonder whether if we don't get adoption support right, whether we will be the root cause of why adoption withers on the vine. I think there's other issues around adoption, legal issues, complications, but actually, if people, you know, in a social media world, if people understand the challenges that may, but again, we're not talking about, it's a one in three chance. It's maybe a 50% chance that you're gonna have some significant challenges. That's me dancing around statistics. Are we going to see that families will look and go, the risk versus reward doesn't add up? Post-adoption support. I mean, I think at this point, I'd like to take a minute to just think about my post-adoption support worker. Jane, wherever you are, God bless you. Can you imagine being my post-adoption support worker? But what I see in my social, she was creative. She was interested. She answered her emails. People laughing. She picked up the phone. She tried hard. And she, you know, she worked to support us as a family and did through some incredibly difficult moments. She came to me to safeguarding meetings and literally sat in a safeguarding meeting, not allowed to participate. Have we dislocated, regionalisation, has it dislocated adoption from local authorities where the safeguarding occurs? Has it meant that actually there's you can't just pop down the office and go, I've got a family, can you talk? It's a different organisation that has left families high and dry. There's so much more I'd like to say. I could talk about contacts. I think contacts, maintaining family links is a massive issue in the midst of that post-adoption support. The evolving needs of children. I've got five children and they've all got five very different perspectives, a lot of them on the same person in their biological family, whether they want to or not, what don't want to. Can you imagine if you got up this morning, having been up all night, having had your television broken, having been called words, you know, that would make a pirate blush, having been at the wit's end, having not slept, perhaps you as an adoptive parent, having been at the doctors, having got medication for your low mood and your depression, for you potentially having really strained relationships with your partner, with your parents, with your neighbours, who all have a very good opinion about how you should raise your adopted child because they see the green pastures and not the child. Can you imagine having to pick up the phone this morning and ring post-adoption support team? What would you get? I don't know what you'd get. There's so many other things I'd love to say, but I really appreciate you. And I think today I would hope that we would get a sense of the future. I wish all the people who aren't here were here. It's a postcode lottery. When I told a few people I was coming, they gave me story after story after story. And, you know, I'm a bit of a weather vane for bad stories. I understand that. But I just want to encourage you really to take this best practice guide to heart, to listen to what's been said today, and stretch out and influence the people who are not here to bring, you know, bring to bear good practice, to re-establish those old-fashioned social work values that make such a huge difference. Listening, talking, communication, body language, answering the phone, being on time. I used to have a social worker who would ring me if he was going to be 3 minutes late and say, I'm going to be 3 minutes late. And I'd go, but what did that communicate? It communicated, you're important and I'm bothered. And I think that's, a lot of families don't feel that they're important. They feel that they've been sold a dud, if I can speak plainly. That the promises of, we will be here for you, don't appear to necessarily have transpired. It's going to be a great day. Thank you very much. And did I have any more slides? Oh yeah, I did have a slide. Hey, that's the little curly haired one there. Look at her now. Yeah. I stand next to her a lot, makes me look good. And that's the little one there. And yeah, oh, there's the good Mrs. Coates in the corner. God bless her heart. She's in Australia for 3 weeks. Not impressed. Okay, who am I handing over to? Liam. Sarah Jahal. Sarah. Thank you. Oh. Oh, thank you.